with Zach Noe Towers.
Sam Pancake.
It's me.
It's you.
Are we starting?
Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
great.
It's just a, we creep right in there.
Okay. I like this profesh setup. You need
is
to.
Is it?
For me, this is.
Okay,
compared
okay.
to what I do on my podcast, this is profesh.
What do you do on your podcast? Is it just like an old gramophone?
It's literally Victrola, like an ear trumpet and a ham radio and just crystals I found in my meth jar. Wait, that's not right. My meth jar?
Does meth come in jars?
Did for me, baby.
Nice.
Came in Ziplocs.
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
Wow. Where do we start? I mean, there's just, I've already jabbered your ear off with gossip and industry insider scoop.
Sam
for half a fucking hour
was
already.
Giving me the hottest tea I've ever experienced.
Now, can you imagine if I was the person who would just sit there and do an hour of that every day, like some people do? I would, first of all, I would lose all my friends and connections.
Yeah.
But I bet I would get so many clicks and views.
Oh, yeah.
Naming names.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, it'd be short-lived.
It'd be short-lived. I mean, I think it would be long-lived because I have a lot of stories, but it would be my friendships and possibly my career as
yeah.
an actor would evaporate.
Your career wouldn't. You're too talented.
No. Oh, you're so kind, but I don't know. Anyway.
You should do Gay Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
Where you're just like dropping little morsels.
Well, I want to write. I keep threatening to, and I've written some of the essays that I've told some of these stories and storytelling things, but stories from war stories from my career. But there's so much shit that I like. They're like, just do Blind Item or Redacted. And I'm like, that makes the story less fun. Also, some of them you would fucking know who it is from the context.
I think
because
you should
of
do
IMDb.
It. Do it. Get that book
I was
money.
On this show. Yeah, well, I'm have a lot. Yes, I will. I'm working on that. Not very hard, but I think about it. I think about it a lot. And if I ever have, like, God forbid, they're like, you have 3 months to live. Whoop. I'm going to crank that shit out.
Are you?
Make a shit ton of money and then the proceeds go to charities and my nieces and nephews.
Okay, you see, in my head, 3 months to live means climate change has taken its swing at us.
Oh.
Everything's about to start boiling.
Yes.
In which case, I wouldn't write the book.
Oh, then there'd be no use. Yeah. No, that's true. But I mean, if I got a prognosis negative, like I would do heroin and then I would write a book.
Okay, wait, can we talk about sobriety?
Of course, okay. Yes. Yeah.
I think about this all the time. Like, the asteroid's coming.
Yep.
Do you do drugs?
I think about it a lot.
Do you?
Yes. I think about it a lot. How much in depth should we get? First of all, it's like, oh, Sam, I don't know how to find them anymore. Like, I used to be.
Oh, you can find them.
Even after they find you.
Yeah, they find
you. As we know, they find you, honey. They turn up in your pocket and you didn't even know it.
You, especially with all your contacts, mm-hmm. you could have drugs delivered to this apartment in the next hour.
Fuck, you know what? Let's do it.
Okay.
Click into podcast.
End of what happened my career.
To Zach
yeah,
and
like
Sam. I think about that not to the degree that I'm worried about my sobriety,
sure.
quite honestly. I feel pretty solid.
Because you're 10 years sober.
10 years sober, June 23rd.
That's so cool.
This year. Thank you. But I, you know, the mind likes to play. I don't have a day job. I'm lucky enough to work a lot, but I got time on my hands.
Yeah, and some money.
A little bit.
Enough to do some drugs.
Oh my God, when I think about when I didn't have money and all the drugs I did, woof. Anyway.
You probably also positioned yourself to be around people who gave them to you.
Like, yes.
Pro bono.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, for a while in the 90s, our coke dealer moved in with us in this big old house in Los Feliz. Have you heard my story? I think you've heard some of it.
There's a really dark part of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've heard that. But yes, I lived in just
a huge house.
The shocking thing to me about that period was how much it coincided with me being able to quit my day job working as a commercial casting associate in 96, 97 because I was doing so many commercials.
Wow.
Because you could do that then.
Oh,
things
do both.
Have changed. Well, you could book enough commercials to make a living.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It used to be like a big paycheck, wasn't it?
Mostly. Not okay. always guaranteed. Okay. But I was able to leave that day job and just have a lot of time on my hands and do like a commercial or something once a month or so. This is like in the late 90s. It was also building up to the .com bubble bursting.
Oh.
all this money, and then I was doing all these drugs, and we lived this big crazy party house with a pool, and my fucking stamina, dude. Like, I realize now that...
Because you were a young child.
I was a young child. Well, I was in my late 20s, early 30s in that period. So... Early 30s-ish.
Wow.
But...
I don't want to hammer that point down.
It's fine. Thank you. Good. Thank you very much. What was I going to say?
It coincided with not having day jobs.
So I... The more I did drugs, the more I kind of continued to work. But I will tell you this, and I don't mean to trigger anyone or encourage anyone to do this, but I realized later in life that... Meth is Adderall, and Adderall is meth. It's very similar.
It's the same first four letters, M-E-T-H.
Methamphetamine,
yeah.
Adderall. And I was like kind of just self-medicating with meth because for a while there, when it was, because you I think you might know about, like, things started off fun and great. Like, it took me a long time to get to the point that I was like, Sam, sober the fuck up. Like 32 years worth of it. And for a while, I got so much shit done on meth. In a good way,
yeah.
Until it'll turn on you because it destroys your brain and eats your soul, of course.
But for a you while got a there, lot of
I,
stuff
remember,
done.
I remember booking. I can say this shit now. Hey, go to my IMDb. I'll tell you. I do that in some of my shows where I say, "Here are the shows
what, you
I
were was on drugs?
Filled with meth, filled with it."
Friends.
Yes. Oh my God, this should go in the book too. Only I did two episodes and it was only one and it was by accident because they called me that day and I was in the middle of a little pre-Christmas meth week and I suddenly had that thing of like, I'm going to get in trouble, but who gives a fuck?
You're like, no.
And I was in a place where I was like very high functioning on it. It was like a little tap in the morning. It was my coffee. That's a whole long story of that. I only did Friends twice, but because it's so lauded and such still this huge part of
people,
life.
Yeah, well, it's playing all the time.
All the time.
You know what I mean? Like...
Which my residuals thank it for.
Stop.
But it is like I remember vividly every fucking minute of that second episode I did because I was on meth. And like even when you're there, because I did like later seasons. Someone was like, what seasons? I'm like, I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
I think it was 2003. You tell me because I didn't watch it that consistently. But anyway, that show I did and... I booked a pilot that did not go. That was a sketch variety show where I had to do five characters through the door, and I was so terrified. But the meth got me through. I'm not encouraging anyone to do it.
But you can book so much work if you do.
It mostly is terrible, but there's a couple things that went right. I hope that I'm not harming anyone by saying
no.
All
this is primarily sex podcasts over sobriety.
Well, let's pop into sex then.
Oh, I can't
I
wait.
The thing I did not do on
sex,
meth, right? But by myself, I had plenty of like self gratification. There was a lot
jerk
of
jerk-offs, yeah, marathons.
Yeah. Back with fucking. I'll tell you a quick story.
Oh, please.
About the days of me on meth. When it was like, not the times when it was like, I'm getting shit done, career's coming together. oh God, I'm sorry, I'm being distracted by the fact that I have barely fucking slept this week. It's been too hot, as I told Zach, so y'all my brain.
Do you need some meth?
I do, it would probably fucking focus me.
It really would. Wait, do you have ADD?
I definitely have some sort of attention problem that if I was someone who was... born in 1990 would have been
You'd
diagnosed
be on
and medicated
Ritalin and stuff. Yeah,
at this point I'm choosing not to do any drugs at all other than my fucking acid reflux medicine and my thyroid booster and my prep,
yeah,
just because I don't do well with substances, as sure. We have found out,
sure, ones that you can abuse,
ones I can abuse,
yeah,
and no one is probably going to put me on anything,
yeah.
But when I have recreationally abused Adderall, what is this thing called? Provigil. I think it's called.
It sounds like a book in the Bible.
Uh-huh, right.
Provigil.
I think that's what it is. They give it. It's a speed, and it was like someone was. I had a friend who was stealing it from his mother.
Good.
And it was like, this is what they give to the military guards to stay up all night. And I was like, oh yeah, this is also meth. Just
actually,
so y'all know,
I hooked up with a fighter pilot.
Wow.
On a cruise ship. And he was
inside a car like Titanic. Did you get all the forms of transportation in there?
Unfortunately, no. It was on an inner room, so there was no window. And when you close a door in an inner room with the lights off, it's pitch black.
Wow, yeah.
But he said that he brought the drugs that they give him to stay up for 3 days.
I think that's what this is.
And the drug to like come down.
Holy shit.
And he was a mess. But Godspeed.
Wow, yeah.
Flying over our country right now.
Great. Good luck, everyone.
Okay, wait. I forgot what we were talking about.
Okay, I was talking about sex and meth.
Oh, and you never combine them, except for drinking.
Well, no, I would just be like, it would be like me jacking it by myself to porn, but this was VCR porn, y'all. It was not ideal. I'm thinking about late 90s, early 2000s.
Sure.
But I remember one time, I had this is where it all comes together. I had this Florida Orange Juice commercial running all through, like, for a couple of years. I was a Florida Orange Juice dad, and it was on all the fucking time. And do you remember when you had to put the TV on channel 3 to watch the VCR on it?
I think so. Or, like, input of some sort?
Yes.
Yeah.
You, this is, again,
it was like the blue 90s. Screen.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So you put it on channel 3.
Wow, you just unlocked,
and
like...
And if you were... Yeah, right?
I haven't thought about that in forever.
It would pop... You know, you would have to pop the video out, and then the TV would sometimes, for whatever reason, the input or whatever, would go back to a channel that was already on.
Oh, no.
And I can't tell you all what this is. So I was naked, jacking it, just fucking by myself in that house in Los Feliz, my dong hanging out. I think it was that house. And I was fully bonered and by myself, and I pop out a VHS tape to put in another one, and the screen goes up, and I'm right down on it.
Oh,
on
no.
The VCR to try to get it in there. So the TV goes onto the live TV feed, and it's me looking right into my eyes on this commercial, and I scream because I've been up for 4 days.
Yeah,
I'm not on my fucking mind.
You see yourself.
I screamed, and that's a boner killer. B, terrifying. Like like me driving this SUV with a baby in the back, drinking a jug of orange juice, y'all, and I'm like, fuck. That was crazy. And I remember even then I was like, oh my God, this is a good story for later. I need to jump back in my bed and jacket.
You did. It didn't deter you that long.
Not that. Oh no.
In a methy minute.
I had the meth up in me.
Penis in hand.
Yeah. I've got so many meth stories. They're all kind of the same. But the thing is, yeah, it did. I will say this. In case anyone feels like I'm glorifying it, it fucked up so many aspects of my life. It's a miracle I never got arrested or pulled over, or for all the meth driving and drunk driving I did. It fucked up my relationships in terms of like these prime times for me to be having sex and hooking up and dating. And I did hook up. There were definitely hookups in the
mix,
but
it wasn't
for
like,
sure.
Let's smoke meth and then fuck.
No. I never smoked it, which doesn't. I'm not trying to be like I never smoked it or shot it, which I didn't. Or all the other things I learned when I was in rehab later.
Sure.
I was able to wean myself off meth by 2005 or six. I was down to like one binge a year, and then I was like, I'm done with it. So I thought I wasn't an addict.
Yeah.
But then I was sort of like, I'll never forget in 08 or 09 because 07 was the writer's strike, fucked me up. 08, 09 was the big financial crash, fucked me up financially.
Damn.
Not working and not having money were what always pushed me into drugs.
Sure.
Because it's so fucking boring and you're sad and you're tired. And I'm like,
why not
for 2 weeks?
Yeah.
And it's not like now because there are so many more jobs, there's so many more opportunities, there are so many more auditions. I'm lucky enough now to just get offers. I couldn't be, you know, when I have those moments about drugs, I'm like, and then what? Because, you know, the next fucking day they're like, you have to come to Vancouver tonight for the show you're on. And I'd be like, what? Anyway, the times that I should have, and I didn't learn a lot of this till later. I'm sure people are listening to this thinking like, you're not on meth now. This is me, y'all. Meth calmed me down and focused me. Yes, I have attention problems. Yes, my brain is a blender filled with, you know,
lots
whistles and clicks.
Goodies. Yeah.
So
I love it.
My boyfriend was meth. And then later my boyfriend was, even when I had an actual physical human boyfriend, my boyfriend was vodka.
Wow.
Because I cross addicted to drinking in 08. And I was going to say, like, I remember the first time I was like, I miss being on meth binges. I miss checking out of my life for a week and not having to deal with it.
Wow.
And that's when I was like, I'm going to stay drunk as long as I can.
Wow.
And see if I can do that. Wonderful, wonderful thing to do, you know.
Are there meth hangovers?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it worse than alcohol? Or just different?
I'm trying to remember. It's different. God, I'm not, again, in a way, when I first did meth and then also with Xanax, I was like, oh, I found my dream. My meth hangovers were kind of, as I slowly came down, they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
But then there can be a real depression that you don't realize is a depression. Not as bad as the depression I used to get after coming off ecstasy, which I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that. But like, I want to say this because, again, I don't want to look like I'm painting a glorious picture of drug use. I'm a man. I'm over 50 now. If you want to know more specific than that, y'all, Google me. I grew up. I got out of high school. AIDS was rampant. I was in college. AIDS was rampant. I moved to LA in the late 80s. AIDS was rampant. I lost friends. I lost my uncle. I lost my boss. I knew a lot of people, HIV positive, friends, acquaintances, coworkers who either thought they were going to die soon, and some of them did die.
Mm-hmm.
So I came into this, my sexual, after getting out of like repressed, terrified tell anyone about that. I knew I was gay since I was 4 years old. I strongly, vividly remember the moment that I was like, oh shit, I want man muscles on me. I love men. It's never
stopped.
So you're
a slut since you were four.
My brain was a slut.
Did you know that you can help keep this podcast alive and thriving? That's right. Just go to patreon.com/towerbottom and sign up for a level that works for you. What's that? Your budget's tighter than my impossibly tight hole? That's okay. Just leave a 5-star rating and a little review. Baby, money and compliments will take you everywhere in life.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel anytime.
Can I be real for a second? That goal you have to exercise and eat better, you really can do it. But nobody is going to do it for you. And nobody has to, because you can do it if you have the right tools and a community that cares about helping you get results. And that's us, Beachbody. It's as convenient as your TV or laptop, but you need to decide that you're worth it. Let us help you succeed. Here's how. Go to Beachbody.com to claim your free membership and start feeling great.
It was so like I
same,
didn't
same exact same
right
since five. I was looking up shorts.
I was looking down like guys shorts just to see their chests, shirts just to see their chest, anything I could see.
Yeah,
looking at like it was. I mean, the fucking thing about our brains. I mean, I know my brain now and I know how to deal with it, but you don't then.
No,
you know.
And you're told it's wrong. The things you're thinking about.
Oh my God. It was the most hotly homophobic Christian.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a perfect. Okay, so where'd you grow up?
Rural West Virginia.
Okay.
In the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I was born in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the worst thing you could be was a faggot, a queer. And then
or a woman.
A woman. Woman. You are from?
St. Louis, Missouri.
Missouri.
Yeah.
Missouri. Where I have been. So I'm sure it was similar.
Yeah, it wasn't great. And yeah. There's no YouTube uniting us.
None of it.
It was very isolating.
Very isolating. I was terrified. I didn't come out to my friends until the end of my junior year of college. I didn't have sex until the senior year of college when I was already 21. And then the second semester of my senior year, I was like, woohoo, this is fun. But
so you were straight presenting until then?
Well, I mean, I thought I was. I can look back now and I'm like, who the fuck was ever fooled?
So they were really being nice to like let you have your journey?
It's polite. It's yeah. The politeness.
Yeah.
Well, in the 70s, yeah, people didn't know. I mean, everyone, you could probably today even you walk down the street in my little hometown with a polo shirt on. It's like, you faggot, you know.
And I mean that in the most derogatory way.
The most derogatory, ugly, not on your side
That's
way.
That's wild. Queen. Wait, what about your family? What do they think of gay?
Oh, honey. Well, you know, maybe you don't know. Why would you know? I have an older sister who was married to a man for a while. Now she's with her partner of like almost 20 years now, who's a woman. I had a sister who's now my brother who transitioned.
Oh, my gosh.
In the last few years. I'm not going to get into too much of their stories.
Of course,
of course. Stories
no,
to tell.
No.
And especially the transition. I don't know how many people know that. And then I have, so that was like, and she was, well, my sibling was, we all thought lesbian for years, but then this happened recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I, you know, I grew up in this big old house in the country. The Pancakes have been in this county since the 1740s. We still have these lands and farms there.
Oh, my God.
It was a very, as I see now, because privilege doesn't see itself. it was a very privileged upbringing.
Sure.
There's a quote from a book that it's like, I grew up in a world so polite, no one ever told the truth about anything, which is from this story, Drunk with Love by Ellen Gilchrist, which I used to say in my first one-man show that I do about my family and my background.
Oh, of course.
So, but what I wanted to talk about and hit on, I'm really fucking... Sorry, because I'm not giving you any room to ask questions.
I love it. You're making my job very easy.
This is the top in
me. You're
like,
this is what we're going to... You are doming out all over this.
I didn't realize how much of a daddy bossy top I was until the last few years. Averse, too. So there's the thing. And we all learned a lot. Especially once you're fucking sober.
Oh, and you're like, and you have to.
You have to deal with it.
Yes. And you're like... You have to ask questions about yourself and your actions constantly.
Yeah.
Like, why did that make me upset? Why does that scare me? Why am I turned on
by
that?
Inventory. Yeah.
I'm so glad for that.
So I...
Repressed. But you knew.
But the thing is, a lot of my drug and alcohol use I know now was the constant vigilance. And I know this from therapy. This is not from my own brain. The constant vigilance that a lot of us queer people have growing up when we know we're different and we're terrified to be here we are. I was very suicidal as a child. I was very depressed. I was extremely anxious. And I was called things like, you know, high strung and prissy and all the words. Mm-hmm. But I was terrified of being found out and beaten or killed. It informed every moment of my life. So when I first had that first drink at 16.
You're like,
yeah,
you the know. Relief. Oof. The relief. Your mind stops going ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga.
And then when I first did the first meth bump in like 95 or 6 or whatever, I mean, there might have been some earlier in my LA life, like late 80s, early 90s, but it wasn't like this time where I was like, I was like, this is the answer.
This is it.
So, and a lot of that has to do with my brain and the way the attention and focus stuff is. And it also took away all my anxiety and fear.
Wow.
So, which I had plenty of. And my fucking sex life was constantly... It felt like back then, it felt like a fucking minefield of, you don't know what's going to, especially for drinking, like I...
Navigating, flirting and stuff?
No, getting AIDS.
Being infected. Okay, flirting is kind of like my AIDS.
Dying.
Jeez,
I didn't want to die horribly like some of my friends.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was like you could have, and I have talked about this before, by some miracle remain HIV negative. And there's many reasons and times that could not have been my story.
Yeah, of course.
But it also, the fear of that stuff kept me out of a lot of situations, even when I was drunk, where I was like, and I really want to go to a sex club and see what that's like, or go in this back room, or go off with this guy, or see what this is, where my repressed, scared self would be like, just go home.
Yeah.
Go home, jack off, fell asleep.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Go home, don't go home with this guy. And it was not just the fear of HIV or getting the virus or any other STD or whatever. It was the one good thing about me, which I had some friends who didn't have because of their backgrounds and their experiences and their bodies. They're like, no, I have to hook up. I have to fuck with a person. I have to fuck or get fucked raw or whatever. Or you forget the condom or the condom breaks. But I was someone who, I would say this one guy was like, dude, you've let him ruin your life and you hook up with him. We go back to Akbar. He's there. You freak out. Like, just do like me. Go home, jack off, fall asleep. Yeah. It's so much easier.
Or you're like, it's messy on all fronts.
On all fronts. Don't. My whole thing was like, I don't want to have to go into Akbar and it be like this gauntlet of guys I've hooked up with or slept with.
And like
with,
not looking at making eye contact.
All of that. And it's enough of that already. I didn't need more of that.
Sure.
Plus I was definitely known at Akbar. My picture is literally still on the wall.
Has Akbar been around for a long time?
It opened the
Akbar is a popular bar on the east side of LA.
In Silver Lake, long may it wave. It opened, I'm pretty sure it was like New Year's Eve 96 and 97.
Okay.
And I lived in that house in Los Feliz at Commonwealth and Avocado all the shit went down in. Well, walking was a little far. We just drunk drive. We did walk sometimes. But Mike, we had a giant New Year's Eve party and it opened. And I remember going there that week.
Wow.
And I have one of my little original from Scott Craig, one of the owners, little like card, like my number of like Akbar VIP thing. We were there all the time. Anyway. I'm still back there sometimes, but
you're like, it's easier to go home and jerk off and get tangled up. Come in
because I didn't want to be like, I also I'll let you ask some questions.
No, go for it. We're on a ride, honey. I'm on the roller coaster. My hands are up.
Okay, well, you know, I'm your older gay brother, stepfather, yeah. Uncle, daddy, whatever you want me to be, and I'm here to tell the kids the way it was. And I am the thing that you're younger than me, but you're not like grow up watching internet.
I was born in 85.
Oh, okay. So yeah. That's like around when I was still in college. So got it. So.
I remember commercials on Nickelodeon about HIV when I was like in like early 90s.
Really?
Like you can't get it from hugging. You can't get it from kissing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I still think that when I graduated high school in the early 80s, if I was a kid who just like went right to New York then to try to make it as an actor, I might be dead now.
Yeah.
And
I think about that too.
Yeah.
Not about you, about me.
That's where my oppression and my fear about sex and being out and everything probably saved my life.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
It's because I graduated from my high school in Romney, West Virginia. Then I went to WVU in Morgantown, which was 2 hours away and felt like worlds away. And this giant big city, it's a small town too.
But
hooray for Morgantown. But like
comparatively.
So, well, the thing with me though is that this is going on through the 90s, like, we didn't have any gay porn to watch growing up. I never saw gay porn until I saw this. I was with this guy from college who wasn't even my friend. And we were in Myrtle Beach and he showed me this video. And I actually hated this guy. I don't know why we were hanging out. He was a part of a friend group and he was the other gay guy. He's like, I want to show you this.
Well,
and I was like, okay.
Yeah, just to exactly. point out the obvious.
Yeah.
There's only one gay guy in the room, you fall in love with them.
And he was like, come with me to this place above this pizza store where I work, and I'm going to show you this video. And I'd never seen VHS of gay porn before. And he ended up blowing me. And I was so fucking mad. I was like, oh, he set this up. And it was like, this isn't really consent. And we'll get to the non-consensual stuff of all the non-consensual sex I had where I didn't realize that
you're
wasn't okay.
Advantage, yeah.
It's only recently I realized, I'm like, in college, oh, that guy... He sexually assaulted me. I was raped. Yeah. Anyway, but going back to, which we can talk about that later, but going back to, I didn't know what to fucking do. So my first experience when I lost my virginity after a Christmas party in college with one of my best friends' guys, he was my best friend, like had this boyfriend he lived with who was the guy who, he's weirdly, he died. He died in 2020. He's the guy who raped me. Which is a story I can also tell. But my beloved friend, who I'm still friends with, he broke up with that guy, but he was also having a little affair with this other guy who was a grad student. And we went home after a Christmas party, and he was like, wait, because I was like, I'm a virgin. He was like, what? Because I was such a sassy little salty bitch with a mouth on me. He was like, I can't believe you're a virgin. I'm like, I am. Everyone thinks, you know, that I'm not, but that's just the front. And then he taught me a thing or two, and it was fucking great.
Wait. The guy, you got R-worded before this or after this?
After this. Okay, so that was Christmas. Okay. A lot happened to me from the Christmas of my senior year in college until the May I graduated that senior year.
Wait, tell me about your first gay sexual experience.
That was him.
Okay. So it was good.
It was great. Oh, yeah. It was great.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It was so nice. He was so lovely. We're still Facebook friends. I definitely, you know, I graduated. We didn't do it ever again. I don't really know why we didn't. Oh, because I was fucking everyone else who, like, because once the word got out, I was like, oh, I'm going to have sex with this one, and this one. And I kind of got to take my pick for a while. And a couple, at least one.
Because you were like the
guy.
Fresh, uh-huh. the new piece of prosciutto.
And that thing where people, because I thought I was ugly and terrible and awful and hideous. You know, I thought so much self-loathing. But, you know, it was before I learned to be like, even if I do feel ugly, I'm like, if that guy thinks I'm hot, I'm not going to say no.
I'm hot.
There are other times I'd be like, no, mate, not me.
Okay, Jim?
Fuck that. But this is, I was like, okay, you know, before I, and these guys, even this one guy who I also still Facebook friends with was like, I had no idea he was bi. And he fucking, woof. But what I didn't do with those guys, because people, it wasn't like now where you watch internet porn, the kids start young and they know everything to do.
Yeah.
And these guys didn't know to get down there if you want me to bottom for you and fucking do your due diligence.
Licky, licky.
Licky, eat it out. Like all the things you got to do. And I remember thinking enough before then that I knew that gay guys took it in the butt. I'd read stuff, I guess. Probably I'd seen erotic porn fiction somewhere, somehow.
Sure.
And I'd seen straight porn.
Yeah.
So I thought it was just like a vagina that like it would go in. Like it is not as we know.
It's not. If you guys didn't know before, we're here to tell you it's not like it's a vagina.
Our PSA, and it's not a pussy down there if it's on you. So I was like, get it out. I remember the first time where the first guy tried to...
Paralyzing.
Because he also had been... I'm sure he'd slept with guys who were like, it was easier. And I think it was particularly hard for me. And I did figure this out later. Like, oh, a lot of my butthole clenching is all emotional.
Yes.
And some of that shit, babe, I did not work through until the last few years during COVID, where I was like, I got plenty of time to work through this shit.
Let's unpack some boxes.
Let's unpack some boxes and some buttholes. So one of them being mine. So I've always had this thing where I was always a bottom, like the spirit was willing, but the flesh was too tight.
Same.
Yeah. So
talked a big game.
Yes. And wanted a big game, but it came down to, it was like, hell no. Now I kind of know more, but and also however after college, so this guy ended up like having sex at and on me in this bed in a lake house during the week we graduated, and it was like there were some guys I had sex with. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And this is the guy who I was like, he disgusts me. I don't like his acting. I think he's awful. I did not like him at all. And he got in bed with me, between me and this girlfriend of mine. Again, we're still friends on Facebook. She was, he thought, passed out. So did I. And he just proceeded to have sex on my butt. I didn't let him get all the way in. It's that thing where you're like
grind on.
I was being too polite. I would not get him off. And I just was like, just suffer through it. And I never thought of it as rape or anything other than like, ugh, this guy. And I realized now it's one of those things. I remember specifically the bed. I remember what happened the next morning.
God.
I remember the underwear I had on. And I'm like, people are like, that's sexual assault. That's rape, you know?
They said that then or now?
No. Now, later on in life. Because I was just like, this is
then
being
you're like,
a dude.
Yeah, it happens.
And other things have happened too, you know? And like, men are strong and they can
manipulate,
pin you down.
You.
And I've had some other situations where I also never knew the things that we didn't know to say for me growing up. And I didn't know a lot of this shit the last 10 years. I'm not comfortable with that. No, I have a boundary about that. And like, get the fuck off me, dude, you know? And part of it also was like, at least they want me. So anyway,
speaking my language.
Right. So I moved to LA. I'm sorry. I moved to Myrtle Beach for a summer. Ended up being there a year and a half. Had a boyfriend there who was this gorgeous, tall, muscly guy with a big old dick. And that's the other thing where like, along with all my bottom stuff, I somehow pulled in all these big dick dudes.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, because I didn't see it. Like, there was before Grindr and Tinder.
Oh, that's kind of fun,
right? It was the Christmas present of like, what's the first time? And so often I'd be like, holy fuck. Like, that happened a few times. It's like, I pulled it in, but what, other than blow it, what was I going to, you know, there's a lot of things you can do.
Yeah.
But this guy, Edward, I remember him vividly. He wanted me to stay there and be his boyfriend. He worked at Casual Male, and he was almost like, barely talked. He was not very smart. He was this big muscle dude.
Nice.
And he was the first guy to eat me out. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, this is a thing? I had no idea. And I was like, and then he was the first guy who full on with his big old dick, like fucked me.
And you're like, it's
in
great.
Myrtle Beach. And I was like, he also, I remember this now because I know we had been drinking and I think he gave me a Valium or something.
Oh.
Which he didn't, it wasn't in a bad way.
Yeah, he was like, this will relax you.
And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And we hung out for a while, but he thought I was going to move with Charlotte to him to be his wife while he managed the Casual Male at the Charlotte Mall. And I was like, no, bitch, I'm going to be going to LA. It was a really good experience. And then there were full relationships I've had in the 90s and thousands where we didn't have butt sex at all.
HIV?
Because of HIV. And also I realize now a lot of it was just like sloppy drunkenness and not taking care of business and not either one in the relationship being that aggressive of a top and just like not having...
Just kind of clumsily hand-mouth
like
stuff.
Lots of blowjobs. And then you fucking come and then you go have dinner or whatever, you know, and you get your... You know, my ex, my one, it was, we were only together a year and a half, but he's the one who, like, I've done so many amends. I still, when I see him, I'm just like, yet again, I would like to say to you, my dear.
Apologize.
And he gets it. He's a good guy.
Wait, you say only a year and a half. That's long to me. Have you been in a lot of long-term relationships?
No, I haven't, because I would pick, guys would come, no. And for a while, I missed my window when I really wanted to hang in there for a great boyfriend. I missed my window in finding that guy at that time. Also,
is that a real window or a perceived window?
A perceived window for me of like when I was in my 20s and wanted nothing more than to have a great hot boyfriend for, I realized later, all the wrong reasons.
Sure.
I thought that that would, you know, my therapist says it's ego accessory. Like, look at this great guy I got. That means I'm good.
Check.
Yeah, exactly.
Checking off boxes.
And there were a couple guys I also made the mistake of, I'll befriend this hot guy. And he, because I had close friends before who, like, were like my college experiences, like, if I didn't actually have sex with them, a couple of friends, I'm like, I just want to fool around with you. Like, now that you're gay, I'm like, okay. So I thought that would happen in LA later, and it didn't necessarily. I mean, it did a couple of times, that there's a couple guys where I was like, oh my God, he's the one. I saw him from across the crowded dance floor.
Right.
It was even pre-Akbar, or maybe it was Akbar, and just being like, and making friends with them despite how
awful they were. I'd have sex with the guy and work backwards. Like,
oh,
you know,
see, I wish I'd done. See, I didn't do that.
It didn't work either.
See, there you go.
Because I'd be like drunk, fall in love with him on the dance floor, have sloppy sex, wake up, and then be like, oh, this guy's a tool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I've done that too.
Yeah.
But I realize, underneath all of these shenanigans throughout my life, was not wanting to be seen, not actually wanting to be intimate in a relationship, because I, you know, if I really wanted it to happen, I knew how it could happen. I could have picked the guy that wasn't like, and this is a perception too, like out of my league or hard to get, or like often my thing, and this has happened to me in sobriety, where like, my addict shit, even though I'm sober, gets connected with another guy's addict shit who is not sober.
Oh.
And have this crazy sexual, fighty,
like
the person I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
When I got here and I was telling you about that person.
Uh-huh.
That kind of either a mental illness, drugs, alcohol thing. And I don't mean extreme mental illness. I just mean like whatever their...
addiction or their...
Or whatever's going on. Like if some mania, because I got a little bit of that in me too for sure, comes through the family. And I'm not bipolar. And I've also been with bipolar guys. You know, I've really made the rounds.
Sure.
In my quest to not actually be in a real relationship, turns out. Turns out that's what... And that's also when like... I thought, oh, that's what I'm supposed to want. And now I'm realizing I'm fucking fine just having buddies and dating guys and hooking up with guys who are on the same page. I fucking love it.
Yeah.
And, oh, I was going to say, it's like with those guys who are trouble, let's say, I always say that our Velcro gets meshed together and you can't pull apart without a big, ugly sound happening. You know, without a big like... which could happen in a car or in an apartment or at a bar. But here's the thing I want to say, and I made a note of this on my way over, is like this thing, like in Uncoupled, which we were talking about, and all I'm going to say about that TV show, I'm glad it's on. I watched all of it. Hooray for queer stories being told. That's all I'm going to say. A lot of people I love on that show, a lot of people behind the scenes on that show I love. And I want more of our stories told. But I am tired of this trope and this meme, the memes and all this thing about I'm a gay guy over 40 or 50, I'll never get laid again. Bitch, let me tell you, I'm coming up on my late 50s. I've never had more sex. I'd be fucking all the, not every day, like I
but
could
it's,
be
it's you,
not
you
true
have access to it. It's
yes.
not it's a myth.
I mean, this thing, if we're gonna get real about this, once Hinge and Grindr, everything, these guys want to sit on a fucking beard. Like, I'm growing it back now because I had to shave it for work. But, like, in fact, this one guy on Hinge was like, let's meet back up when your beard grows in. And I was like,
your buddied in beard.
Because he'd never seen me without one, but he was out. It's this whole thing. But I was like, I get it, dude. I get it.
You're into the beard.
It's like, I'm into certain aspects of you physically, and that's fine. It's a starting point, and it either happens or it doesn't. And no heart, no bad feelings. I'm like, I fucking get it.
Yeah.
And it's a thing. And like, I'm verse. If you want to talk about topping and bottoming, that's a whole other thing. I'm in a fucking fuck buddy type relationship that's very interesting.
Wait, what makes it interesting? The sex. Four years.
I know. It's weird because.
Is it on again, off again? Or is it.
It's just, my friends don't get it. My therapist is even, I've never heard anything like this. He's a weird guy. I don't have romantic feelings for him.
Okay.
I don't have emotional feelings other than like friend.
Okay.
He, from the very beginning, was clear. We can be lovers. I can never be your boyfriend because of stuff in his life I don't want to get into.
Yeah.
We're both on the same page in terms of what we like. He has limitations about what he'll do and not do, which is another reason I would never be with him because I only can fucking bottom for him.
Oh.
Or try to. I don't always, but like he's definitely the top.
Okay.
Sorry, friends or family might hear this. He, as in his words, busted this hole back open over, you know, in the last 4 years, which I was like, no, I'm not.
I'm not bottoming.
I mean, I wanted to, but I was like, who's going to, like, I've been in these sexual things where I'm like older, topping, beard, like kid, guys, like, hey, coach. I'm like, hey, player, what's up? This is through Instagram.
Yeah.
This isn't even for fucking Instagram.
You
has
can
been
fuck
my
on any
grinder.
App if you try hard enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
You could fuck on fucking, I can't think of a, damn
LinkedIn.
It. I can't get in a good
Yelp.
Joke in.
It's great.
I was going to say Airbnb, but of course you can. That's not even funny. The news app. You'll figure it out.
But because
honey,
of your like daddy run.
Just whatever it is and what they project on you. And if I did stand up again, if I did some corny gay stand up, I'd be like, hey, because there is that thing like, I won't date an actor. And even my therapist has said to me, like, because there's this actor who likes me. And he's like, Sam, no, you can't date another actor. Which I am always like, I don't want to do that to another actor because I don't want someone to do that to me. And my whole shtick is like, hey, why wouldn't you be with an actor? I can play any role. I got costumes and wigs.
No.
I'm verse. I can do role playing. I can do voices. I can do whatever you want. And you get in some of those fucking sexual situations, you're like, yeah, boy. You know, I can do all that shit. It's fun for me.
Yeah.
And as I grow, and like, thank God, because I used, how much should I say? I've grown into my topness and my daddiness, and I fucking love it. And I, because my thing for so long was like, I had to pretend to be young. And young means like, you know, all dewy and fresh like I ever was, you know, with a fucking Marlboro Light hanging on my mouth and a fucking seven Manhattans in me, you know, like, hey. Just like, you know, because I had this, again, this kind of like bottom fantasy about, and that's all fucking daddy issues. That's straight up daddy issues.
Just the flip side.
Of me, like when I wanted to be like the little boy for someone or the bottom for someone or whatever.
Issues.
Yeah, that's daddy issues, which all money issues are daddy issues too, which I've learned through therapy. I have a great therapist.
Wait, really?
Who's gay. It's all about your relationship with
money.
Who's in charge and who's in charge of the money and who's in charge of the power and who calls the shots. Because money is freedom.
Yes, it is.
And
I didn't know that.
Security.
Yeah.
And daddy is where the money and the security comes from traditionally in the family and the structure often. That's part of
my
it.
My dad has never figured out money.
Yeah, yeah. My father was definitely the purse string holder. And now he's dead. See what happens?
Wow.
No, it's not related. So, yeah.
Wait, you're leaning to the daddy thing, which you like.
I do. I am. I can do it.
Oh, with this guy. You said this guy opened up your bussy or something. Busted your booty.
Busted that hole back open. Busted that daddy hole back open because he is like he's in his 30s and he's into fucking older guys. You know, which is a thing. And I had this fling with this really good guy in 2020 who sadly didn't live in town and it didn't work out for a few reasons. Where like we just fucked for 10 days straight.
Wow.
All over the city.
Wow.
That was really fun. And then I had a great pandemic. I worked a lot, fucked a lot.
Wait, how did you navigate fucking? Were you like, you were tested for work?
Well, I was tested for work, first of all.
Yeah.
And then part of it was like, I'll have to say this, like I was in Vancouver, in the fall of 2020, because I recur on this ABC show, which you could easily look up, but I'm afraid to say it on this because ABC is going
to
be like,
to the Goldbergs?
Fired. No, I did the Goldbergs a couple weeks ago.
I knew you. Yeah.
I'm
Sam Pancake has been in every TV show. Everyone.
I've been in a lot of TV shows, and I still don't own a house, so don't come, you know, that's the part of the daddy thing I'm not doing, where I'm like, I'm a generous dad. Oh, I can be very generous, and I am, well, that's one thing I think, one of my things I talk about when my one person show is, I did not have an older gay
role model?
Role models, performers. There were older gay out-ish actors in New York at the time, yeah. You know, but here in LA there, and I worked in casting and I worked in acting,
wow.
And there were very, very few people were in the closet. They didn't want, because back when gay meant AIDS, you're going to die of AIDS.
Yeah.
And they were nursing or taking
and
care.
And a lot of them probably did.
And people, yes. And some of them did, and some of them died, or they're taking care of their partners. And it was just this, you know, we lost a whole fucking generation of gay men, a little bit older than me and my generation. I lost a few close friends. It's still something I don't like to think about deeply. I'm really grateful for the cocktail, and I'm really grateful for PrEP. But what was my point? I got off there, and I started thinking sad thoughts.
You didn't have any role models?
Any role models? Gay actor out role model guys.
Yeah.
So I am happy to do that if anyone sees me as any kind of role model for younger gay dudes in terms of like, I just did this Zoom to say this young guy, this Louisiana. He DM'd me and he was like, I heard you on this podcast. You say, I was hoping if you give me advice and stuff because of like, I did this,
yeah.
A kind of a version of this talk, but it was about the business and being an actor.
Yeah.
And I brought that up and he was like, I heard that. It was on this podcast I completely forgot I did. He was like, you said this and this and this. I was wondering, he's such a sweet, very handsome, young Southern boy. Well, young, he's 25. And I was like, yeah, I'll Zoom with you. And we Zoomed this morning and he was like, I'm thinking about getting in the industry. Can you answer my questions? And I was like,
you're mentoring.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not going to do that for everybody.
Yeah.
But when someone reaches out like that, and I do it for... I do it for a lot of people. Like, you know, some of my children, like Roz and stuff, you know, where I like, am I child Casey? Like all these other people who I'm like, you know, trying to be.
Well, have you ever heard with mentorship, an ideal mentorship, both people are benefiting from it?
Yes. Well, I feel benefit. It's a way to give back. I don't have kids. I'm not going to have kids. I don't even have
okay,
a pet.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
7 nieces and nephews. I have 4 younger siblings. I have
tertiary 8,000
cousins on both sides.
Yeah.
My cousin on my mom's side, my second cousin, she lives here. She's moved her at 18 to LA. She's in makeup school. She just graduated.
Oh,
I'm like
cool.
Helping her, you know, doing whatever
okay.
I can. So that's the way I give back. But also, I'll take you out to lunch. Like this kid, he was like, I might come out and visit. And I'm like,
oh my God, please.
I'm like, yeah, I'll take you to lunch. I'll show you around. But then the thing with me, I have to be is like, you know, the thing is, because I know how that felt back then, is like, I want to be clear to this person. This is not sexual or romantic or whatever.
This is
a
friendship.
This is business and friendship. Yes.
Yeah.
And I tell myself that too, because of course I'm a horny dude where I'm like, oh fuck. Hey, hi. And there are guys I've met through Instagram who are just like, hey daddy. And I'm like, hey boy, you know, like,
yeah.
You end up like sexting or doing all the things we do, or some of them move here or they visit and you have a great time.
Yeah.
But that's in the beginning. That doesn't start through like, can you give me business advice? Because that's abusive.
It's power.
It's power. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, there have been times in my life for sure that I have not behaved well, especially in the 90s where like I was working in casting and every third person in the world was like,
hey,
this or that, and the other. And I am sad to say I got so many of my friends commercial agents because that was easy for me. But like, I did not get laid out of that at all.
Oh.
The only times I had sex on the casting couch was with my boyfriend at the time. And I was running these commercial auditions and there was a couch and he came to visit and I was like, let's fuck on the casting couch. How funny. He was another one in a long line of like giant dick. Couldn't fit it in me. I didn't know how to make it work. He didn't know how to make it work. We were both drunk a lot. And he's someone who I'm like, I wish I could have a do-over. And then I ran into him at a special meeting that we know about.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, here it is. And sadly, he was...
betrothed?
No. Oh. He just was very mentally ill and had a lot of problems and was struggling. And
yeah.
Just... I tried to be friends with him, and I got out of that relationship in the 90s because he was really verbally abusive.
Wow.
And that had not gone away in the same pattern of like,
stop.
Right in the beginning, and then slowly he would tell me everything that's wrong with me, and then it would get really ugly. But it was, but at least he knew he was mentally, he had mental illness.
Yeah. Know? Wow.
Anyway. But my God, we had some really fun sex back in the day.
Oral sex?
Yes. Well, we had, yeah.
Or you fucked him?
No, I never fucked. Again, it was full, these guys that I've kind of ended up with.
We're tops. Capital T.
This is the 90s, early
Party
1000s.
Tops.
Yeah, they were all tops. There's a certain kind of top that can really sniff me out.
The big dick ones?
Some of them like that, for sure. And it's like getting jobs and offers, or like when you get to a certain point, if you're me, and you're like, you could thank Christ now. I do the audition. I literally forget all about it because I've learned, or the shows that I recur on where they pin me or have me in.
Like,
it only happens when I'm not expecting it.
Sure.
Like literally, and it's that thing. It's like a Jedi mind trick where like, if you're thinking, it won't happen right now. And like, it will, it literally happened yesterday.
Wow.
Where I got off my podcast. I was like, you're on hold for this movie, which
Isn't
I may or may
great,
not do.
Because you've recalibrated your brain to be satisfied with where you have. And then everything's icing on the cake.
And that is the life lesson. And I think it's been one of the meanings of my life, because the meaning of your life is the meaning you give your life. That's free will. And I believe that.
Yeah.
And what you learn and grow, and if you hang in there and persevere, and God knows I'm from privilege and I'm white, and even though I'm queer and grew up in the time I did, there are a lot of experiences that I'll never have because of my privilege. That being said, that I persevered and hung in there and stuck to my guns and not killed myself when I wanted to, and not drank myself to death when I wanted to, you do reap the benefits later. And one of them has been, and this is some of my young people that are my friends and kind of mentees. I'm like, who are still in their 20s, early 30s, like, oh my God, I can't stop thinking about that audition and how do I get this and how do I get this? And I'm like,
you gotta let it go.
Like not being attached to the results and getting your recovery of not getting something. Cause I remember the recovery either of wondering if I get the thing.
Oh my God, maybe I'll get it. Maybe it shoots today. And you're like, they might still call. And then the next thing you're like, maybe the shoot got pushed.
Oh, the rationalizations we make. And if like now, or I find out that like you test for something that would change your life and you don't get it. And I've been there a few times.
And like
my recovery time, I'm like, oh my God, speaking of hot, your fucking neighbors walk by. Recovery.
He went
the stairs. Came down the stairs.
Yeah, daddy.
Oh, fuck.
I think he has like a big dick too.
He definitely does. And that's the kind of daddy I'm not. That if you want that daddy and I want that daddy, I'm not that daddy.
Yeah.
Were you looking in the mirror?
Oh, no. I was looking to see if he's going to walk by. It's also one of those things where if someone was talking out there, it would sound like they're in my kitchen.
Oh, wow.
It's like this thin walls.
Yeah.
Cheap apartment, thin walls.
Well,
love it.
Acoustics.
Never want to move. But
acoustics.
Uh-huh.
Just that's the way it is.
But yeah, he's very like, he's
daddy. Yeah. That is, interestingly, the kind of guys that I'm really attracted to that I usually never get.
Huh.
Or get to hook up.
Jedi mind trick.
But I haven't tried it. I have told myself that they won't want me.
Oh, you got it. You can't feed your brain garbage like that.
Exactly. So that's still, it's still a work in progress.
Progress. Yeah.
I don't like to congratulate myself. Not true. But I think I'm doing well for like 4 hours of hot box sleep last night. Oh, but to go back to the recovery time, like my recovery time of knowing I didn't get something is down to like, depending on the thing, like 15 minutes. Like
amazing.
I can almost, when it used to be weeks, you know?
Of course.
But then again,
you spiral, kick yourself down the stairs.
All that shit.
Yeah.
But then also it's because I know I've done enough work that I'm already like, I mean, I have that thing because I'm getting to a certain age and I hope to live for a long time and I hope to never retire. But I'm like, if something terrible, even at the beginning of COVID, I was like, I went through a really terrible pandemic that lost a lot of friends that the government had given a shit about us for 10 years or more.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, it took y'all a year. And this is the bad way to look at it, but it was like the worst of me having these reactions during COVID.
Like, I have not seen anything.
Anything. I was like, you have to stay at home and not, and again, privilege, but like, stay at home, not go out. I'm going to be
no
fine.
No one acknowledged.
Which goes back to like just talking to all these people. Everyone was in the apps. Everyone was DMing. Everyone was doing all this stuff. A couple of guys came to visit. That's what I was saying earlier. Like I got to fuck a lot, but I did go to Vancouver for 2.5 months for the TV show I do up there in the fall of 2020. And I was like, woohoo, grinder, fuck, I'm going to fuck in Vancouver because it was my third season on that show. And I hadn't ever hooked up in Vancouver because usually it's a shorter amount of time. Like, but this was like, you're coming up.
Quarantine
for 2 weeks. You're going to be here for a few months.
Hotel.
Well, gorgeous new apartment, wow. Corporate living. Magically, one of my best girlfriends was up there too in the same building as me. It was great. But then I was like, I can't fucking, I get tested every minute. Like, you can't hook up with people.
No. So and you could throw your gig away.
Yeah. Also,
could you imagine worst hookup of your life? And then you get COVID from them. And then
can you imagine?
They send you back from Vancouver without a job.
Yeah. And they might not even pay for my flight. Oof. Well, that's like, you know, thank God we didn't all get through it. People died. People are still dying. I'm grateful that I got through it okay. Because at the beginning, I was going to say, that brings me back to like, oh shit, this could be bad. I hope I don't lose my mom or my aunts and uncles.
Of course.
And some or older people that I know or anyone I know. And I luckily kind of didn't. Not like AIDS. We're like...
People were...
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
But I was like, hey, if I get this, because at the very beginning we didn't know, we didn't know what's going to happen, if it's going to burn through us like the fucking, bubonic plague.
At the beginning I thought we were going to have bodies on the street.
Yeah.
Because everyone in Italy was like, you have no idea what's about to happen to you.
Like medieval shit. I'm going to go medieval on your asses.
Yeah.
That. So I was like, if I die now, I will be okay with what I've done. I feel clean about it. I'm glad I'm sober. I can look at my higher power with whatever happens. You know, I don't know what happens after we die.
Yeah.
I've recently
been thinking it's like a ride at Six Flags.
Mm.
Like you die and you're back, like you've gotten off that ride and you can like pick a different ride.
That is lines up with what I think. I do think that like, you know, that thing where people my therapist a lot because he's a good therapist and he's helped me a lot. But he's also a Buddhist and he doesn't bring that into it at all. But like when I ask him to,
yeah,
because I had a friend who ended up dying of AIDS in 2017, which is a whole weird long story and a lot about probably mental illness and mismanagement. And just that's a whole other story.
Sure.
So like this shit still happens. And it was one of my closest friends that I still miss every fucking day. But he just couldn't. In sobriety, we talk about you can't manage your life, the mismanagement of things.
Yeah.
Before it's one of the reasons I had to stop drinking is I just couldn't manage my life. And this person had, even though without the had couldn't manage anything, but wasn't drinking or drugging. So we're not sure what happened there. But the point was he wouldn't take care of his life. This is before he died. The story is getting rambly, but like my therapist would be like, well, you know, if he doesn't take care of it now and he dies, you just have to come back in and take care of it in your next life. And I do kind of, I'm open to a lot of stuff and that lines up with my shit. That's why I'm like, oh, I mean, of course I'm not going to be able to take care of all my issues and problems and fears and challenges in this lifetime. But you know, I want to take care and clean up as much stuff
as
possible.
The last thing is,
yes,
what's a piece of advice you'd give to little Sam before he began like his sexual journey?
I would say don't be so afraid. Be careful. I wish there was a way to tell him, but it's impossible. Don't fucking worry about what your hometown and your parents and all these people that you think are going to kill you and beat you up think about you. I wish I had started dating in high school. Not that there was really anyone to date.
Were there other gay kids though?
There were. And I'm still Facebook friends with some of them. But one of them who also weirdly, that was the thing in the last 2 years, my high school bully died fairly young. I mean, in his 50s. And this guy who raped me died. And he was also in his 50s. Within 2 years of each other during COVID and neither of COVID.
Karma's patient.
So one of the other gay kids was my bully.
Wow.
Like he did some shit to me that was clearly like looking back now, I'm like, oh, you were being abused at home.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, I would have just like stopped being so concerned and afraid. I would have not been so afraid of my own body and its pleasure. I would have. There's so many things I would have told him.
You can say them all now.
What if he had listened? I don't know. No, I just would be like,
because this is usually good advice for anyone.
Got it. You're gonna be okay. I would say, try to find healthier ways of dealing with your issues and problems than drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
I would have said try harder to find a better therapist earlier.
Mm.
I would have said, and this is all acknowledging I had to go through what I went through to get where I am, and I'm very happy now. It looks different than I thought it would when I was young. Like, I don't own a house. I also know I don't think I want to own a house because it's so much fucking trouble and you have that hanging over your head all the time.
Yeah.
So unless it's season 8 or even season 4, I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Also, one big earthquake.
Hi, bye. Yeah, exactly. And I would be like, I don't know. God, this is where my lack of sleep is coming.
No, you've listed like 40,000 things.
Yeah.
So you're getting bonus points right now.
Okay.
Trust your instincts. I love that.
Trust your instincts about people. If you are attracted to someone who treats you poorly or rejects you, ask yourself, why do you keep coming back?
Why?
What is in there?
Who's the common denominator here?
Yeah.
Me.
Me. Yeah. Take responsibility for your part in things, which I took a long time for me to get that.
It's even tough for me now as a very sober person.
Yeah.
When but this is the thing, I barely get into altercations anymore. But when I do, I'm very stubborn about it. Because like, no, I'm behaving well.
Yes.
I promise you.
Yes. Oh, me too.
Zach. It's still like, I mean, obviously I'm there.
We're human.
Yeah.
Like it's sometimes I have, when I get triggered, activated, whatever you want to call it, like engaged in some anger thing about some asshole on the internet, some asshole in real life on a plane, which I got into a thing with, like on the way to my father's funeral, which is another situation. And the situation where you really have to take the true high ground and just take it and sit back, it grates against everything in my body.
You're like, I'm right. But it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. And it just...
because they're not ready to hear...
and they won't hear it, and there's something wrong with them. And that was and there's many different versions of this. It's one of the best pieces of advice that helped me a lot when I was in fresh out of the detox ward and in rehab. And at this point, and it's so funny, I laugh about this now because I got so far over it. I was so angry at my father, who was still alive, and my brother, who's also still alive, who was actively a drug addict and alcoholic and has been like a real problem. He's been a lot of trouble for a long time. I love him. I wish him well. It's been hard. I was so mad at my father, and of course, freshly sober after 32 years of drinking and drugs, pretty much every day.
A lot of garbage.
Yeah. I said, and this one counselor pulled me aside, and I was like, I can't get over my anger with my father. I'm so angry at him. And he said, pray for him. And I was like, what? Fuck him. It's the last thing I wanted to hear. And he was like, just do it. And I did. And I have my own form of meditation, prayer, spiritual practice, whatever you want to call it. It has evolved a lot, which also keeps me sober. And I do it every day, which is more advice I would say to myself, like,
meditate.
Stay sober, like, maybe 4 days in a row.
Uh-huh.
See how you feel.
Uh-huh.
Take a month off. That's a big one I would tell myself. But with the father thing, I was like, you don't have to feel it. You just can sit down and say the words like, I love you, I forgive you, I want to move on from this. And honey, let me tell you, shit starts to shift.
Because you're
feeding
yourself.
Start crying again.
Feed your subconscious different food.
Because they do die. You know? We all do. And I got complete closure with my father before he died. And of course, the son of a bitch, like, we had to fly back. He's going to die bedside. We had the big moment.
Dude.
He lived 5 more years.
Stop.
Oh, yes. Managed to drain off all this money because he... Stunt queen. Oh, it's so perfectly him. But I love him. I forgive him. You have to move on. You have to let it fucking go. Because there's so many things he gave me that I'm so grateful for, including my crazy name and my sense of humor. And here I'm going to start crying again. and all this fucking heavy shit. From history, and you just like, oh well, this is my duty, this is my job now. This is, how do I clean this up? How do I help? Not fix, but how do I contribute healthily?
Yeah, how do I help?
How do I help?
the trauma.
And how do I be of service to help others?
Yeah. That's beautiful.
I hope so.
I think so.
Okay, good.
Wait, tell the people where they can find you.
Oh, my name... My name is Sam Pancake.
Yeah.
If you don't know, I'm at thesampancake. Oh my God.
Dot
at
Instagram.com.
Dot Instagram and dot USA. Dot Canada. Dot eat me. And then I am Jay Sam Pancake on Twitter. I have a public page on Facebook. Oh,
TikTok?
Podcast.
Oh, your podcast.
I'm on TikTok, but I don't really do anything.
Yeah.
My podcast is called Sam Pancake Presents the Monday Afternoon Movie, which is where I have guests, which I hope you'll be one
yeah,
day.
Yeah, of course.
Where we look at these movies from my childhood and young adult TV horror movies from the 70s and 80s.
You know, I love horror.
Oh, that's right.
I'm seeing Pearl tonight. The sequel to X or the prequel to X.
Honey, I missed it somehow. I only saw X last week.
Oh.
I'm so jealous of you.
I loved it.
Me too, but sadly, the night before when we saw Nope, I saw the trailer for Pearl and my fuck buddy friend, who I, yes, also go to movies with. We are not dating. I am fully single. I want to make that clear.
slide into the DMs.
No, seriously, do it. When I did Nicole Byers' podcast, honey.
You got some.
I got the deluge, and I loved it. Anyway, send me nudes, send me all the shit. I'm good with it. Do it. But... I didn't realize that Pearl was a prequel. And then he said, like, you know, that's the prequel to X. And I was like, bitch,
No, it's okay. It doesn't give away anything.
It doesn't. But then I want to know nothing. Because within when
that's
I saw.
Me every day.
I don't want to get.
I want to know nothing.
Just
wipe it clean.
Empty slate.
Men in
please,
black
please,
me.
Lord. Yeah. Right. Well, that's why we drank drugs. I wanted to be obliterated. I wanted to be oblivious. I didn't want to live this life. I didn't want to be me. I'm on Twitter at Jason Pancake, Facebook. Oh, my podcast.
The Monday movie, yeah.
And we cover the movies. I just went yesterday with our friend Naomi Akpir again, she's done it three times. It's fucking fantastic. This season, maybe I'll get you to do one of these. I'm calling it Teenage Wasteland. It's not the horror. It's all the, like, 70s, 80s teenage problem, like Sarah T, Portrait of a Teenage Alcoholic.
Okay.
Don, Portrait of a Teenage Runaway. Me and Naomi did Diary of a Teenage Hitchhiker, which was a rich text, to say the least. And I'm doing my one-man show again on October 8th and 9th if I don't have to go to Atlanta to do this movie.
What a great problem.
It's the problems you want
to
have.
My show
Honey,
to film a movie.
My parents now are like, just let the scheduling work out.
Yeah,
that's the problems you want to have.
It will.
Yeah, and it almost always does.
And it'll build more buzz.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm doing my solo show, Pancakes from the Edge, which is a show with stories, videos, and movies, which I want to force you to come to.
Yeah.
Around my obsession with the movie Postcards from the Edge.
Okay.
And then I'm coming up on the Goldbergs in the second episode. And then we all did this movie with Chris Pine this summer as Golden Girls Live. That's why he was in Golden Girls Live this time.
Oh, my God.
A week before all the shenanigans.
Yes, the spit
all
gate.
Of that. And then I did this House Husbands web series, which will come out soon.
Oh, my God.
I also did this fucking... August alone, y'all, I did a part, this fun part in this movie with Sarah Burns and Shantae Wayans and Samba Shoot called Advanced Chemistry, which was a really funny indie that I played another gay asshole in.
Mm.
And then I come back on A Million Little Things on ABC. I'm pinned for October. I don't know.
Wow.
Who knows?
You treat yourself to Sam Pancake's IMDb if you do nothing else, and you'll be like, oh my God, this motherfucker is in a show every week.
It's crazy. As Drogi says, which he used to say as his character, Tanya Roberts, like, go to my IMDb and pack a lunch.
Thank you for doing this.
Oh my God, my pleasure.